coolness the fall is in the air. The kids are back in school. Local athletes are back on the gridiron. And the Tigers are once again roaming for real field. They're just not tackling anybody. The one constant in this season of change are the great deals done every day by Ryan Kimner and his sales staff at Bellman Automotive in Troy, Missouri. It doesn't matter if you're in the market for a new or used vehicle, your next ride will be found at Bellman. Not only do they have financing for everyone, but also a top-notch service department. Make the short drive to 175 Turnbell Trail in Troy, Missouri, and you'll find out why you can't do better than Bellman. 636-462-3600, BellmanCDJR.com. Joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line is the longtime NFL journalist. You can hear him every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. as he's the co-host of the Sunday Football Kickoff. 10 a.m. every Sunday morning right here on 590 The Fan, and you can follow him on Twitter at HBalzer721. Howard Balzer, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you guys?
Doing fantastic, sir. Let's dive right here into week two. What was your biggest surprise or takeaway from yesterday's games?
Where do I begin? I would say probably the biggest surprise is the way the Cowboys got dominated against Denver. Certainly it's not a surprise that they would go into Denver and lose. Obviously in Denver, that's always a tough place to play. But to just get so absolutely outclassed in that game was pretty surprising. You know, you look around the league, I think most of the games pretty much went the way you would think they would. Yeah, always some upsets, but I don't think anything really, really surprising there. But that one. You know, the other one maybe is, and I know everyone's going to start wondering what's going on with Seattle. And it was funny. I hear some people saying, well, you know, it was raining and, you know, wasn't. I said, well, that's one thing about playing in Seattle, right? You're always surprised when it rains, right?
Yeah. Never rains there. It's like a desert.
Yeah. I mean, so they're certainly not accustomed to that. But there's some real issues going on there with their offense. You know, score only 12 points. Look at this division. I know I'm going in a lot of directions here, but look at this division in the NFC West right now. You have Seattle that has scored 21 points in two games. You have San Francisco that has scored 12 points in two games. You have Arizona that could only manage, score 16 in overtime against Indianapolis. We might have to say that the Rams might have the best offense in the division right now.
It's not that far flung if you look at the way they play. Okay, you kind of throw out the first game against Indianapolis because, you know, it's Indy and that team is team turmoil. But they, you know, that offense looked pretty good yesterday against the Washington Redskins. And I didn't watch the entire game, but I did watch quite a bit of it on the Red Zone channel. And yet, Jared Goff, he's a young quarterback, and he made some mistakes there towards the end, which kind of cost the Rams the game. But there were a couple throws that he made, and I'm like, you know what? This kid may be – he may have a future in the NFL. He made a couple of really good throws.
Yeah, and then he sent you off with an unbelievably bad taste in your mouth as he just telegraphed one.
That's what I'm saying.
Unbelievably terribly at the end.
There's the mistake of the young quarterback. But he did make some other throws that I saw that I'm like, wow, you know, he's got a pretty good arm.
And that was like, you know, when you talk about the young quarterbacks and Jacoby Brissett, who, you know, comes into Indianapolis and has been there for about 2 weeks and starts on Sunday. And without knowing, obviously, very much, he did a pretty nice job there. He did the same thing that Goff did pretty much. And he was talking about afterwards, can't make that throw. And in overtime, he gets picked off, gets intercepted on the first pass of overtime. But, you know, that's what happens to young quarterbacks. And you know what? Sometimes it happens to veteran quarterbacks. But it really is strange, at least in two games. And, again, you never can make too much evaluations based on 2 weeks. You can start seeing some trends maybe that you say, I wonder if this will continue. You wonder if this will last. But there's some teams in that NFC West that have some serious, serious question marks. And you know, Arizona doesn't have David Johnson now. So that division might be up for grabs, you know, for all we know. I mean, everyone will expect Seattle to get it together and everything will be okay. But, boy, on the offensive line, they have tremendous questions, and that's probably, guys, the biggest improvement on the Rams is the offensive line. You know, they finally gave up on Greg Robinson. They finally said, no, sorry, Tim Barnes, you're a nice guy, but you're not really a top-level NFL center, and he's not even in the league right now. You know, the 49ers signed him in the offseason, and he was cut. And so the upgrades at those two positions, as long as those two guys, Andrew Whitworth and John Sullivan, can stay healthy, because they're up there in years, but as long as they stay healthy, then that line is a lot better. And you started to see Todd Gurley. He didn't have a great game, but he started running a little better yesterday. So it'll be interesting to see what happens the rest of the season.
I tell you what, Andrew Whitworth just must engender so much confidence in his quarterbacks, because you look at where he left and how badly Andy Dalton is flailing around there, and look at where he arrived, and now all of a sudden Jared Goff looks competent. Tell you what, left tackle just might be a slightly important position there, H.
Just a little bit. You know, just a little bit. And, yeah, no doubt. And I'll say this about Arizona. Yesterday, besides not having David Johnson, they also didn't have John Brown, their speedy wide receiver, and their entire starting left side of the offensive line didn't play yesterday because both DJ Humphries and Mike Iupati were out. They're hoping, they think they'll be back this week. But they were starting the future Hall of Fame left tackle, John Wetzel, and then Alex Boone, who it was very noteworthy that they picked him up after he was cut by the Vikings. And so at least they were able to put a guy in at left guard that has played in the league, even though, again, he's only been with the team a couple of weeks. So getting him probably saved the game for them, because I can't imagine what they would have done at left guard if they didn't have Boone yesterday with Iupati out.
H, you talked about a little bit earlier the surprising result there between the Cowboys and the Broncos. The biggest thing that shocked me, I expected Dak, you know, second-year quarterback going up against, I think, inarguably the best cornerback tandem in the league. And so, the Aqib taking, one back doesn't surprise me as much as Ezekiel Elliott not getting going against a defense that's very good, but the run part of their run defense, that's the weak point if there is one with the Denver defense. So Ezekiel Elliott not really having a great game against them, and then also Trevor Siemian doing that to the Cowboys secondary. I know it's not a great secondary, but Mo Claiborne actually looked like he's a real quarterback last year, so I was surprised to see just Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, despite the fact they are incredibly talented. I was surprised to see them running free by 10 yards at times all over the Dallas secondary.
Well, here's what happened there. And, of course, Claiborne's not with them anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And Orlando Scandrick didn't play because of an injury. And they made a difficult decision that really backfired on them, because they had some injuries at wide receiver. And they had some guys they were a little worried about. Terrence Williams was one, and I think the other one might maybe Bryce Butler, was banged up a little bit. So they were a little concerned. So they actually dressed six wide receivers for the game. The flip side of that was they only dressed four cornerbacks, and then two of them got hurt. And rookie Awuzie got hurt, and another guy, I think it might have been Jordan Lewis, got hurt. So they were down to two healthy cornerbacks that aren't that good players, and they were putting a safety there at corner and just hoping that he'd be able to get something done. So that decision really backfired on them, and it just created a whole lot of issues for Siemian and for the secondary, really, and just created a lot of opportunities for Siemian and that offense. And so that part of that took the run out of the thing. You know, it's one thing, Rock, for Ezekiel Elliott not to have a great game, but we're talking about a dreadful game.
Eight
yards on nine carries. You know, it's one thing if you're bad game, 13 for 51, or because he didn't get the ball very much, but there was just nothing there, and so that was a big factor, and it's funny because I had some questions about their offensive line coming in, because even though it still has a lot of great players, they lost Doug Free in the offseason of retirement. They lost Ron Leary, who left in free agency. And so I wondered, is this line going to be as good? It's still good, but will it be as good? And sometimes that gets shown when you're going up against a really good defense. And so you put it all together, and they just had a stinker. But I'll tell you, the big story, Jason Garrett, I don't know if a lot of these quotes have been that public and circulated yet, but he expressed today, as everyone knows, there's been a lot of pushback about what Ezekiel Elliott did on two interceptions, mm-hmm. and basically, you know, LaDainian Tomlinson was about as harsh as he could be on NFL Network last night, saying that he just quit on his teammates. And he just, on the interception, he just stood there and did nothing. And so today Garrett came out and said, that is unacceptable. He said, I haven't had a chance to talk to him yet about it, but it's unacceptable. He says, we coach our players all the time that, hey, if you're on offense and there's an interception, you're on defense now. You've got to go out there and do something. And, you know, look how many times we could all come up with plays we remember where somebody chased down someone to, whether it was on an interception or whatever. Hey, remember Orlando Pace's great play?
Oh, yeah.
Where he chased, I forget who it was, but, you know, he chased down someone on a play well down the field. That's being a football player. That's, you know, that's doing what you have to do on every play. And so, for his credit, you know, Garrett was very critical today of what Elliott did. And he said, not only am I going to sit down with him and the film is going to be shown, but it's going to be shown to everybody that this is not Dallas Cowboys football. And so he's getting banged a lot by it. And he's going to get banged by his coach. He got banged by his coach, too.
Howard Balzer joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at HBalzer721. Sticking with that Cowboys-Broncos game, do you think that the Denver defense kind of laid down the blueprint on how to beat the Cowboys, bottle up Ezekiel Elliott, and make Dak Prescott beat you through the air?
Well, here's the thing. I've read that a lot today and heard that comment. And sure, that can be a blueprint. But you have to have the players to carry out that blueprint. And so if when you have the players that they have, and you know, and a big part of it wasn't only that they were able to stop Elliott, but it was also the passing game. I mean, you know, Dez Bryant, as talented as he is, and there's been, you know, on the NFL Network, Deion Sanders went off on Dez Bryant. He said, hey, Dez, it's about time that you come up big when you play against good players. That's when you show what kind of a player you are. I mean, anybody can look great when you're playing against, you know, average quarterback. But, you know, he didn't do anything last week against Janoris Jenkins and then against the Broncos and, you know, Chris Harris Jr. and Aqib Talib, you know, arguably, I don't, maybe someone can come up with a better cornerback tandem than that, but I don't know that there is one in the NFL. And so when you have the players, you know, it's like the whole argument about blueprints and schemes and all these things. And it's all wonderful. All that stuff is. But whatever scheme you have, whatever it is, you have to have the players that have the ability to carry it out. And the Broncos have that. And they certainly showed it last night what you can do. But does another team have those corners? Is there another team that has Von Miller? You know, probably not. So it won't be as easy to do that as maybe it's being made out to.
Yeah, Malcolm Butler and Stephon Gilmore in New England, that's probably maybe right up there with what they have in Denver.
Well, you know, Butler got benched yesterday, weirdly.
It's up there, and I'd argue that the Giants is right there too, but I don't think you can argue Chris Harris and Aqib Talib is number one with a bullet.
You probably can't. You really can't.
And it's interesting with the Patriots, like you said, I mentioned, you know, Eric Rowe. Now, I don't know if that was just because of who they were playing or whether there was some funky thing that Belichick was doing. And, of course, when he was asked about it, what did he say? Well, that's what we decided to do. So you know that Belichick is always very, very you know, outpouring with information when you ask him about that. But Butler did not start in that game against the Saints yesterday when you would think they'd have all hands on deck for Drew Brees and that offense. It turned out that Butler ended up being out there a lot because Rowe injured his groin relatively early in the game. But, yeah, so But that you know, when Butler's playing the way he can, that is a pretty good tandem, no doubt about it. But the experience with Tlaib and Harris, the amount of time they've played together, and all those things, boy, they are. You know, there's not too many shutdown corners in the NFL anymore. The rules and the changes and all those things make it pretty tough on corners. But they're as close to shutdown corners, I think, that there are in the NFL.
And I'll say this, the one thing that probably puts, you know, when he's not, you know, either sloughing off or in Belichick's doghouse, the one thing that puts Gilmore and Butler right up, you know, I think even above the one they got going in the Giants and right next to Keep Tlaib and Chris Harris is that Tlaib's an incredible outside corner, but when you go three wide and if you try to like slip Julio Jones, if you're the Falcons, into the slot, Chris Harris is an incredible slot defender. Same thing in New England. Stephon Gilmore can slide outside. Malcolm Butler, when he slides to the inside, is an incredible slot defender, and that's something, obviously, NFL teams always trying to game matchups and things like that. That's the two things that really solidify those two pairings. No matter what you do, no matter where you try to hide somebody to game a matchup here and there, they're finding you and they're going to lock you down.
It's a good point, and the other part of that, though, that allows a team to do that. So we probably shouldn't even talk tandems anymore.
Yeah, trios.
You should probably talk about three guys, because when one goes in the slot, who's the edge corner? And if you don't have that, then okay, the guy in the slot does great, but if the guy on the edge is getting beat, then what have you given up? And the Broncos with Bradley Roby, that's pretty darn good. So it's funny. It reminded me as we're talking. It reminded me. One year, this goes way back when the Rams were still here and Al Saunders was still here, and I was doing a story for a publication on great receiver tandems. You know, what teams have the best 1-2 guys? And of course, the focus was on Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt. But I was talking with Al about other ones and all that, and he says, but here's something you can't forget, Howard. He said, the thing a lot of times that makes the 1-2 tandem great is who is the third guy. Most of the time you don't use a fourth. Sometimes you do, but who's the third guy? Who's that third guy that you can put out there that then puts even more pressure on the defense and makes the 1 and 2 guys even better? And obviously with the Rams, with the years when you had Oz Hakeem,
yeah,
and other guys as the third guy. So that's probably the best way of really judging anymore, is not only to look at the first two, because the way it is now in the NFL – with nickel defense and three wides, teams probably those are almost starters these days, because teams are probably in that formation probably as much as 60% of the time.
I still remember that Monday night game the year after the Rams won the Super Bowl against the Denver Broncos. Yep. And you're talking about Torrey Holt and Oz Hakeem. And I believe it was Oz Hakeem who caught the ball, and he's running down the side of the field. And Torrey Holt was running right alongside him, and they were just kind of talking back and forth. I believe Dennis Miller might have been in the booth that night for Monday Night Football, and Dennis Miller's like, what am I watching? Dennis Miller, they completely dumbfounded Dennis Miller, which doesn't happen too often.
No, you're right. Yeah, I think I don't remember if it was him. Might very well might have been him, but I do remember that play. It was one of the more memorable ones that in all the great plays that we were all so fortunate to witness.
And last little thing, I noticed is Howard talking about how the shifts to the base defenses are now nickel defenses. I thought for the first time. The Falcons, when they were announcing the Falcons lineup, it was they announced the Falcons starting lineup as a nickel lineup, two linebackers, three cornerbacks. And I was like, I think that's one of the first times I've seen them not announce a strict front seven as the starting base defense. So it's changing.
It's about time they do that. And what teams need to do also is they need to list them on their depth chart, mm-hmm, of what guys really play. Because you look at a team's depth chart and they just list the two cornerback spots. And list, you know, who the starters are, and then the guys behind them on each side. But they don't say who is the nickel corner. Same thing with receivers. You know, they don't list the guys who are in the slot. So the depth charts don't do a very good job of really showing what teams are doing. I'm sure some of it's by design, because they don't want too much to be known. But there's no doubt that a lot of times teams will start the game in that. Obviously, it depends on the opponent and all that, but if you think about it, hardly anybody plays with a fullback anymore. So if you have your five offensive linemen, your quarterback, and your running back, that's seven. So who are your other four guys? Is it one tight end and three wides? You know, sometimes you'll open the game with the two tight ends and two wides, but a lot of teams will just come right out in their three wide receiver formation, and so the other team starts. So that's what they're expecting. So they start, their nickel defense, and so that becomes the start. Like I said, that becomes the starting offense or defense quite often these days.
Aaron Rodgers has to watch that Falcon offense and go, man, why can't I have just one or two of those guys? That's all I want. I mean, you look at Matt Ryan, he's got Julio Jones, he's got Mohamed Sanu, he's got Devonta Freeman, he's got Tevin Coleman. He's like, just give me Coleman.
I think, honestly, Aaron Rodgers would pick the offensive line before the skill position players.
Well, I think you're probably right. Howard, we appreciate your time, sir, and we look forward to hearing you this Sunday. Sunday football kickoff, I believe you guys will be at Turtle Creek in O'Fallon. Is that correct?
No, actually that's next week. On Sunday, we will be at Mattingly's at Wolfram and 94.
Okay, I know where that's at.
Yeah, whether it's called St. Charles or St. Peter's,
that's
or whatever
St. Peter's.
It is.
Yep.
And here's the thing about it. The places we've been the last 2 weeks, real quick, they haven't opened the doors till 11. They open the doors at 8 a.m. on Sunday morning, and they have a breakfast menu. So you can get there early, have breakfast. They're going to have all kinds of giveaways. They're going to be giving away gift cards the day that we're there. And so a lot of stuff going on at Mattingly's. So come on over, watch the games, join us. You can get there even before we do. We start the show at 10, but get there before we do. Have a good breakfast and lead it into week three in the third Sunday of the season for the NFL.
Well, I know where I'm going to be on Sunday. That's real close to where I live. So I will see you there, you and Mark Littlebridge, on Sunday morning. H, have a great night. Enjoy the Monday Nighter.
All right, guys. Take care. You too.
That is the great Howard Balzer. You can follow him on Twitter at HBalzer721. That brings the Monday Night Show to a close. The first hour is brought to you by Thomas Bax and American Family Insurance, 314-298-7770. Call now, mention that 590 show, and get a $10 gift card. All guests appear courtesy of the Bellman Automotive phone line, BellmanCDJR.com. We'll be back tomorrow night for a two-hour show from 6 to 8. Yes, 2 hours. So we're going to need a nap sometime in between. We're not going to be used to that at all. The Lovey Smith Show is coming up next right here on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.